If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati, Jake Gutierrez. I want to remind you that right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, got a good weekend of games for you to listen to. Tomorrow, after Track Talk and Chiefs Tailgate and Sports Saturday, we have Central Bank of the Midwest pregame show. But then Kansas pregame, as Nate suggested. And then at 3 o'clock, that's at 2:30, 3 o'clock, Kansas and Texas Tech, followed by Kansas postgame, then Chiefs postgame. And then Stan Weber will be very excited to know that the Dallas Cowboys and Philadelphia Eagles will be on right here at 7:30 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Then on Sunday, it'll be a fun day because we'll have Sports Sunday with Jack Johnson, then ESPN NFL Game Day, then an NFL triple header, boys and girls. Steelers and Ravens at noon, Seahawks and Cardinals at 3:25, and then Sunday Night Football, win and you get in, lose and you snooze, Chargers and Raiders kicking off at 7 o'clock. And we'll even have over on ESPN Kansas City, Colts and Jags at noon and Jets and Bills at 3. So it's 5 NFL games for you on our two stations here. If you are out and about, just listen and we'll keep you up to date on everything that's going on around the NFL. And now let's talk to Stan Weber. Stan, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Sounds like a great lineup of football week. Or game 17, right? This is where we're supposed to be playing the playoffs, but instead we got this extra week, and we're finally here doing it.
Are you glad we have this this extra week, or do you wish the playoffs were starting?
I'm definitely glad that we have 17 regular season games, but now that we have most of the spots clinched, I'm probably ready for the playoffs, if that makes sense. The thing that I worried about with 17 games is that people would clinch earlier than ever and be resting their players down the stretch. And I just don't feel good about that. Doesn't matter if it's the Chiefs or other teams. As an NFL fan, I like to see what everybody plays. And I haven't heard what the Packers are going to do, but everyone else really needs to play this week. So because we've added another game and we've made it such that it appears everyone's going to try this week, then I feel pretty good about this week 17. It's not week 17, I know, but 17th regular season game.
Okay, before we get into the NFL, let's talk about what Kansas State did to LSU in the Texas Bowl. That was a Texas-sized beating that Kansas State put on LSU. Tell me what that was like to watch Kansas State win the Texas Bowl against LSU.
Winning bowl games is a big deal. Winning bowl games for K-State under someone other than Bill Snyder, I think, is a big deal. Bill Snyder won 9 bowl games during his tenure of 27 years, but no one else had won a bowl game. 3 different coaches have made a bowl game, including Chris Klieman, but no one had won one. So Chris Klieman gets to be the second coach in K-State history to win a bowl game. I think that was very big. K-State's won 3 of their last 4 bowl games. They've won 3 of the 5 bowl games they've played in their history against SEC teams. So I think that's good as well to show that you're playing against a high-level competition. But, you know, the real question about this one was, well, LSU is down players. Max Johnson, their starting quarterback, was not going to play. Their 1,000-yard running back, Ty Davis Price, was not going to play. And so you had those issues about, well, how interested LSU would be, how good would they, all those things. And the thing I feel probably best about, guys, is that, unbelievably, Chris Klieman won the coin toss and said, I'm receiving, not I'm deferring. He wanted to put the K-State offense out on the field first, and the LSU defense had been legitimate. It is the part of the team that was more intact, way closer to being the great defense that ended the year. Do you realize that LSU's last 4 games, no team got more than the 311 yards against them? 311. That includes Alabama, and Texas A&M and Arkansas. Alabama played them and scored only 20 points, had six rushing yards. Lowest in SEC games in the history of Alabama's football program. Only 16 first downs and 308 yards. That's how good LSU's defense was. They changed to a different style when Ed Orgeron got fired. They said, what the heck, and went to a blitzing, man-to-man, aggressive style, get-after-the-quarterback type of play. So LSU's defense was the real deal. If you go back and watch the first few plays of the game, you'll really see that. I mean, Skylar Thompson is moving around the pocket, and it does not look good. There are LSU guys everywhere flying around, bringing a blitz and everything else. So when K-State went out against a legitimate LSU defense and drove down the field and scored a touchdown to get up 7-0, and the next time they got the ball, they went down and did the same thing and led 14-0, and then did it again and led 21-0, I feel a lot better of not talking about what LSU wasn't and how K-State caught an advantage and, you know, they really didn't whip LSU and all of that. I'll give you that LSU probably would have scored more points in the ball game if the game would have been played with more LSU players out there. But the fact that the Wildcats went 11 plays and scored on a 75-yard drive and then turned it around and went on an 18-play, 71-yard drive and then went down and scored again, I thought that was very impressive. Skylar Thompson was on fire. The way he moved around the pocket, found his receivers, Colin Klein called a great game. And so I thought the legitimacy of the win was placed much more into my mind and should others when I realized that it was really K-State whipping LSU's defense. And LSU had not given up a first quarter touchdown in five games. And K-State put a couple on them, put 21 points on the first half and the second. It was never stopped. They actually just had penalties and then a late game punt. When it was basically over. So very impressive win for K-State for that reason. And then any time you go back and look and say over history, hey, remember when K-State beat LSU? I remember when K-State in 2013 beat Michigan, guys. It's pretty big to see the pictures of the bowl game and see K-State's uniform out there with LSU's uniform, just like I still have a screensaver of my son making a tackle Stanton against Michigan in the bowl game. It's all these years, it's on my computer screensaver. That stinking Michigan out there that K-State whipped up on. And Stanton was out there playing against Michigan. So, yeah, I think it's pretty darn cool when you get a chance to play an elite program like LSU.
Hey, Stan, you referenced the job that Colin Klein did calling the games and also Skylar Thompson's performance. Two all-time great quarterbacks at K-State now. I'm curious what you could say maybe about just Colin Klein and what he showed, if you can expand on that a little bit, and maybe also just a thought on Skylar Thompson's run at Kansas State and what he should be remembered for the most in his career.
Well, Colin Klein, he's called plays before at Northern Iowa. He worked very closely with Courtney Messingham, and when he's a quarterback's coach, he didn't call the plays, but he's right there sitting next to Courtney Messingham, the offensive coordinator of the last 3 years at K-State, shoulder to shoulder. They're comparing notes, talking about plays. So he has a real good engagement about what K-State's doing, why they're trying to do it. And I think that he had a great respect for Courtney Messingham and what K-State football was about. He didn't try to change everything. Just said, you know, we need to tweak a few things here or there, and we may call some different plays. But you got so many plays. When you sit down, you got at least 100 plays that you can pick from, and you don't even get to snap the ball that many times in the game, and you obviously use duplicate play calls. So, you know, it is a difference when Colin's out there calling the plays than Courtney Messingham, but I thought he did a great job of having a respect for what K-State football was about and the things that they did. Colin has a big advantage, guys. I know him super well. I worked with him. I was his mentor in the business college. K-State Business College has a mentorship program that is part of going through their school. And I happen to be Colin's mentor, so I know him on so many different fronts. He and Stanton are like best friends. So I've known Colin Klein a long time, and the one thing that he and I have talked about forever that gives him an advantage over a lot of other people is that when he's down there trying to call plays for Skylar Thompson or if it were Will Howard or whoever it was, he really understands what the quarterbacks are going through. And, for instance, you may not know it when you practice every day, but under pressure, you may throw the deep out route to the left the best of anything. And the player may not even recognize that they have certain things that they do better under pressure than others, but it's up to you as a quarterback to really understand that that's true. You can't just generically call a play and say, oh, this is our best play. You got to do something that the quarterback is very comfortable with. So in an instance like that, the example I'm giving, he calls an out route to the left and lets the quarterback throw it, and it works, and everyone thinks it's just a play call. It's much more than that. It's knowing your quarterback and how they think and what weaknesses they have. And when they take a big shot out on the field, it looks like a tackle to you or me, but you can kind of tell, like, oh, man, his gut's probably wrenched right now. He's not breathing well. Maybe let's run the ball and not put him in a passing situation. So I think Colin Klein has some real advantages of knowing his quarterbacks and knowing what it's like to be a quarterback in game situations. So I'm very high on what Colin Klein can do, and he put on a show, really, against LSU. He was one step ahead of them all game long. So it was really, really impressive. And then Skylar Thompson, you know, he has an extra advantage of having a sixth year, right? But with injuries and stuff like that, you don't get to play every single day. But Skylar Thompson started out, you know, just a good high school quarterback with ups and downs, competition of others around him, Alex Delton, et cetera, and others, trying to find his way. And he went all the way through that growth period, stuck with it, and ended up being such a solid starting quarterback that when he played this year, think about the Oklahoma game when he came back and threw the ball 40 times that day, all the way through the bowl game, he is looking like and giving you hints that he might be ready to make an NFL roster. You know, maybe a practice squad for a while, maybe a third-team quarterback, but are you kidding me? That is so impressive. He's throwing the ball accurately, on time. He knows where to go. He knows where to audibleize. And his movement in the pocket is super underrated. Like, Tom Brady moves a lot in the pocket, and he's so smart and he can get back on balance and throw an accurate pass. Skylar Thompson able to do that very well also. So he's going to the East-West Shrine Game. He's being invited there. Not saying he's going to be a pro, but I really never thought about him being a pro throughout his whole career. And it shows you his increased development here at the end. He ends up having 40 starts over those 6 years. No quarterback in K-State history started that much. And he ends up winning 24 games, also the most for a starting quarterback. Some of those are accumulation stats, but Skylar really played great football. And in his bowl game, is as good an example. You go back and watch the tape. K-State did so many things well. Deuce Vaughn's tough to stop, et cetera. But really, you know, on the third play of the game, K-State could have easily been sacked and punting the football to LSU. And instead, gets out of there, throws the ball. K-State gets 24 yards, picks up a first down, and he continues to do that, move around the pocket, understand where the blitz was coming from, understand in this man-to-man coverage that LSU brought where his outlet receiver might be open. He just did a great job. I mean, Skylar Thompson did a fantastic job of working in the pocket and quarterbacking the team. And I guess you can't overlook a couple of his scrambles were incredible. He had one third down scramble that I don't know how he made two guys miss. We don't talk about his running that much, but the fact is he's put a couple of great runs together as well recently. So Skylar just played great football, and it was a big difference maker for K-State to put up 42 against LSU.
Stan Weber's our guest. Impressive. Win by K-State over LSU in the Texas Bowl. Let's talk a little basketball real quick before we move on to the NFL. K-State, boy, shorthanded, not only with players but with coaches against Texas. And so losing a home game to Texas and now have to hit the road to take on West Virginia to try to avoid an 0-3 start. That was a difficult situation they were put in against the Longhorn stand. What do they have to do to get the win against West Virginia?
Well, they're going to have a few things go their way. I mean, they're going to be shorthanded again because once you get into the COVID protocol that they saw on Wednesday night, they're going to have most of those guys gone again on Saturday. So it's going to be hard to win at West Virginia. It's always hard to win against Bob Huggins there. It's a long trip. But it's basketball. And, you know, just the ball rolling around and going in a couple different times can make all the difference in the world. K-State on January 1st kicked off the conference season at Oklahoma and lost by 2 points. The game was tied with a minute left and could have easily found a way to win that game. Didn't. But, you know, it's not always – like football, it's usually the better team. The physicality, the game lasting as long as it does, usually the better team wins. In basketball, you can go back and see in a game a four-point game or a six-point game, or like I'm talking about in this example, a two-point game, and you go, really, either team could have won. I'm not standing on a soapbox yelling K-State played great and should have beat Oklahoma. It's not like that. It's just you need to win your share of those type of games, and they've been in somewhat of two of those. The one against Texas is not so close, but K-State got off to a quick start, led by a decent amount, and even after Texas fought back, led at the half. So that was a good, tough, fighting performance with seven players available. Bruce Weber and Chris Lowry, his number one assistant, not there. But then Texas kind of bombed K-State for a little bit and then separated, and K-State fought back again, but it wasn't enough. So, you know, it's really hard to kick the can down the road and say, well, just keep your head above water, keep your confidence level, and you'll be okay. You're going to come out of this. You know, this COVID run is going to end here fairly soon, and you can get back to playing basketball. You're not going to always be on the road at OU or West Virginia. Here we go. But you really can't do that on a Friday before the Saturday game. You got to go out there and hope that you can find a way to beat West Virginia. You can't say, oh, things look real good. But again, there is a chance in basketball. You make a couple of three-pointers, a ball rolls in, and you get a win. So I think K-State will continue to fight. That's the good news, is they have not started to make excuses or feel sorry for themselves, if that makes sense. Around the program, they really are giving it a good shot. But as you know, guys, if you keep losing, the burden on your shoulders just gets heavier and heavier. It's mostly that you don't have confidence, right? You just don't believe good things are going to happen. And that's probably what's the scariest part of this, because they'll be underdogs at West Virginia. And if they lose, it will be nothing embarrassing. They'll start at conference with two road losses and a loss to a good Texas team. Really, that would kind of be expected. The problem is all these other issues, you've lost, period. You've lost. So where are you going to gain your confidence? So tomorrow, it's really, first of all, about don't lose your confidence. Fight like you did against Texas. Believe in yourself. And come out of there with no demoralization in the overall program. And if you come out with a win, I think everyone will be, you know, doing back handsprings. Bruce Weber probably at his home and some of the guys out there on the court. It's not going to be easy. They're really shorthanded going to West Virginia. But they fought hard, guys, and they have some offensive capabilities. They're buying into Bruce Weber's system. It's just, as you know, where are you going to get wins in the Big 12? I mean, where are you going to get wins in this conference? The teams are just so good.
Stan Weber's our guest. Right, Stan, let's transition to the NFL. Any reason whatsoever? I'm way overconfident, and so I should probably shut my mouth. But any reason whatsoever to fear any kind of letdown at all by the Chiefs against the Denver Broncos tomorrow afternoon in Denver?
Well, you know, when you say any, let's just go down that little small probability. Here's maybe the risk. I'm not saying the prediction, but the risk is that they really believe Tennessee is going to win their game against Houston. If they really kind of, you know, just in your deep in your bones, the Chiefs are at Denver getting there today and going, you know, the NFL upsets happen, but it's not going to happen. So if they don't give themselves much hope for Houston winning the ball game, and they know Tennessee's in one seed, there's a small chance that they'll say, you know, we have not a lot to play for. Let's make sure we don't get hurt. Let's go out and play the game. We'll beat the Broncos and let their guard down. And maybe the Broncos do a few good things, play hard, and win a ball game. But I don't think the Chiefs should be one of the organizations that buys into that, because, guys, it wasn't very long ago these same players, I mean, basically these same star players for sure, were involved in that 2019 Miami Dolphin win at New England. Remember that? Fitzpatrick? I mean, that was more improbable than Houston upsetting Tennessee on Sunday and allowing the Chiefs to get back to the number one seed. So I don't expect the Chiefs to do that. I think they're a professional organization who understands you got to play each game, and let's get some momentum, get on the winning trail. Division foes, it's important to win division games. It's kind of intimidating for the next year. You know, that record that Andy Reid has, I think he has some pride. Don't you think Mahomes has some pride in his record against division foes? It's outrageous. So I don't think the Chiefs are going to let their guard down. And if that's the case, they're the better team.
And if they were to lose, then that number two seed would be in jeopardy. And that does make a big difference, even though they don't get a bye week, even though they have to play the opening weekend. You know, they win that game in the second round. Let's say everything holds together. You would have played, you would have a rematch, let's say, against the Bengals in Kansas City, as opposed to having to go back to Cincinnati. So there is tremendous value in holding on to the two seed. You give yourself, as long as you stay alive, at least two games at Arrowhead in the playoffs as opposed to one and then having to go on the road.
Look at you, Stephen St. John. I was telling you just the small probability, possibility that they may let their guard down, but you bring up even a better fact. I mean, I wasn't looking to say the Chiefs aren't going to play, but you put a trump card on there because being the number two seed means you're going to get a home game. If you win that first round, it's a big deal. I believe strongly that these seven teams are very close to each other, that there's hardly a difference in any of these seven teams. And there's definitely no significant difference. That's why I thought the number one seed was so valuable this year. It's always valuable, right? You want to be the best. You want to rest your guys and get a week off. You want to get an automatic win and move forward. You want to have home field advantage throughout the playoffs. I get all that. But this year, the reason why I was so focused on that first round bye and having the best record in the AFC was the fact that you don't have to play a game in that first round because each game is losable. There are no dud teams in there. And I would go one step further. Really, we don't need to stop at seven. There are more than seven teams in the AFC that are pretty close to each other. It's pretty easy to look at the Raiders-Chargers loser. Could easily be a winner and in the playoffs, and we'll respect them. So I do agree with you that having that second seed and saying we got a home game against fill in the blank, I mean, what a difference I think it makes to say Chiefs at home against Cincinnati versus Chiefs at Cincinnati. To me, that is a big differential in that next playoff round. So I agree with you. You trumped out any chance of the Chiefs not being ready to play. I wasn't trying to say they weren't. I was just trying to come up with something.
Do we still have you, Stan?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if you were finished your point or if we lost you there. So we think the Chiefs are going to be ready to play. The defense of the Broncos is the one strength that they have. They've actually allowed far fewer points than anybody else in the division this year, and they've got some guys coming back that have been missing the last couple of games. They did a really good job on Travis Kelce last time around. He only had three catches for 27 yards. They really roughed him up in the game. Any concerns you have about the Chiefs' offense against that unit of the Broncos?
Yeah, I mean, it's the NFL. And division foes play you harder and understand you better, draft for you, play you twice a year, aren't intimidated. I just always factor in that when it's a division foe, you're going to have more of a challenge if you're the favorite. It's just going to be harder to get rid of them and separate and win the ball game. And obviously the Broncos defense is solid, has answers, a philosophy that they're going to use. And their head coach, you know, that's what he's about. He's not a great head coach, but he's a great defensive coordinator. And he, as a head coach, he's continued to be able to do that. So I'm impressed with that part of the Broncos. I will say, not to, you know, pile up and act like the Chiefs are going to lose this game or anything like that, but I think that Denver will play very hard. I don't believe at all that these NFL players pack it in at the end. I don't think that's true at all. They're pros. A guy like Drew Locke is saying, I want to stay in Denver as a quarterback, or I want to be given an opportunity to be a starting quarterback somewhere else in the world, in the NFL. I want to beat a team that I grew up around, the Chiefs. I mean, Drew Locke's going to be locked in like you can't believe. So I do expect Denver to play very hard, and the Chiefs have to be good to beat them, and I do think the challenge of the Chiefs' offense against the Denver defense is worth respecting. But my theme here, as I've been saying, as the Chiefs went down the stretch, and they've been a new team in most people's mind, right, guys? Down the stretch, we look at the Chiefs differently than we did early in the year. We don't usually combine this whole season. You don't hear very many of us talking about, hey, over the 16 games, we are blank. It's more like the Chiefs, after that early start where they struggled, are a new team, and here's how they're a new team. And one of those things has been, well, the Chiefs see more cover two and umbrella coverage. I think 12 points, like I think 66% of the time they see cover two, and the most any other team in the NFL sees is 54%. You know, maybe there's an answer to slow the Chiefs down, frustrate the players, and make it hard for Andy Reid to call plays. You know, that's been a theme. Like, what's wrong with the Chiefs' offense? The defense has been so good. What's wrong with the offense? And I've been saying to you guys and to anybody that wants to listen, I think the Chiefs' offense is going to be just fine. I think Patrick Mahomes has done a great job of adapting to what's being thrown at him and playing with that style and getting better and better at it. And so what I've been saying week after week is I think the Chiefs' offense is going to come back and be on fire. that, you know, how many times have you heard me say, Nate, cover two is something, is not something new. You know, it's not kryptonite. There are ways to attack it. And the reason I'm talking about that is, you know, we didn't spend a lot of time going backwards and looking at the Bengals game. But my big theme on that was, look at the Chiefs offense. I mean, the offense looked great. And that is exactly what I expect. So I'm not worried about the Chiefs struggling because it's about Kansas City. When you ask this question about the Broncos, it's more, hey, division game, I respect Denver. But I think the big theme for me is the offense is coming around. And it's going to be just fine when it gets to playoff time. The defense, on the other hand, I did not buy in to the defense being dominant. A new defense that shuts down everybody, holds everybody to 10 points, and is going to just carry the Chiefs the rest of the way for the season. I never bought into that. And I think you saw that in the Cincinnati game as well. The Chiefs defense is good. They're kind of middle of the pack in the NFL. They have certain things they do well, and they have certain things they struggle with. But, you know, one thing that they have at risk every game, guys, in my opinion, is getting flags thrown, because they play that more aggressive style of defense, more tight man-to-man, more blitzing, more aggressiveness from Spagnuolo. And when you do that, you may get a flag thrown here or there, and you just raise your hand up in the air like you were at the bingo game, like, what the heck? But the Chiefs are testing the officials more plays than other teams are, because they're not playing much zone. They're playing physical with the receivers. Hopefully, when we get to the playoffs, flags fly less. Remember, that's been kind of a tradition. Hopefully less flags and allowed more physicality, because the Chiefs are a team that are going to test that edge all the time. And they got burned against the Bengals, and I'm not on the Chiefs. I thought some of those were awful calls. But you are testing the officials to possibly throw the flag with the style of defense the Chiefs play. So I do think that is something to monitor. That's one way the Chiefs could lose a playoff game, is a few extra flags. Look no further than the latter part of the second quarter in the Super Bowl, right? I mean, that was a giant differential in that game, where the Chiefs just had flags thrown on them right and left. And we saw some of that in the Bengals game as well. So it's something in the back of my mind that I'm monitoring every game the Chiefs play.
We've got Stan Weber on the line. Stan, you good to do another segment?
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll take a break. We've got Stan Weber talking football. More after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us on this Red Friday, January 7th, 2022. Chiefs play at the Broncos tomorrow afternoon. There's some other games that have some playoff implications. Of course, Houston plays Tennessee, and that's the game that means the most to the Chiefs. They already beat them once, Stan. So, I mean, it would, I don't know, could lightning strike twice in favor of Kansas City?
Yeah, I could. I mean, the Texans are playing better. There's no doubt about it. They've been better the last five games or four, so, and David Mills has settled in as a quarterback. It is a home game. And Tennessee, they are a tough team to beat. I like a lot of components of Tennessee, but it is not easy for them. No game is easy. The way they try to win, it's just there's something about it that they don't just separate over the bad teams. I mean, they got to battle and fight and persevere with their play-action passing and run the ball. You know, it just seems like they have to work really hard in every game, and therefore they are a team that could be upset. If we were talking about Bill Belichick's New England Patriots 5 years ago with Tom Brady, I would say no chance. No chance. They'll go out and just play pretty and be so far advanced over the Texans, easy win. But that's not how Tennessee does it. They're kind of, you know, they got to get in a wrestling match with everybody. So, yeah, there's hope. I mean, you can't count on it, but there's still a chance that they could dump that game. Derrick Henry is a really good player who they've missed, and sure, they've been playing pretty well without him, but it's still not like when they have Derrick Henry back there. And if he is back, it's not going to be the same guy for a little while. He's got to get into the rhythm. So, yeah, there's a chance. And like I said, we as Chiefs fans don't have to look any further than it was way less probable in my mind that Miami could win in New England a couple years ago. But they did.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, gosh, looking back at Fitzmagic and that team, anything's possible. And you know, we've talked about it a little bit, Stan, and I'm still curious, you know, Davis Mills, what does the future hold for him as a potential? I mean, a lot of people seem to be thinking in Houston that he might be the odds-on starter to go into next year. What do you think?
It could happen, but it's not at all probably where listeners may think you're leaning. Like, hey, do they have their franchise guy? Okay? He's not going to be elite, Nate. It's awesome that he went from Stanford and worked his way into being a legitimate starting quarterback. It's great. I mean, he's done a fine job. He's kept his composure around a crazy situation. I mean, you still think about one who people thought was maybe the best quarterback in all of the NFL or one of the top five is still there every day at the facility with the Texans. He's coming to practice every day to meet his contractual obligation. It's so weird. If you're just, you know, David Mills, kind of an underdog quarterback from Stanford and saying, you know, how can I play? And you're looking around. That is such a messed up situation in Houston right now. But the thing that he does is he stays within himself. He throws well from the pocket. He's smart. He understands things. It reminds you a little bit. He's probably not as accomplished, but it's a little hard for us to see. Isn't he a little bit like the New England Patriots are experiencing with their young quarterback? I mean, he's not dominant, but he does what they need to, and therefore he is a good player. So, yeah, if he's the starting quarterback next year, David Mills would be the equivalent of saying, hey, you know, we could now be 7-10 next year. We could be 8-9 with this quarterback. But, no, I'm not going to put him in a category that he's the answer to threaten the playoffs. I don't think that. I mean, maybe the lowest seeds and things like that. Every team has a chance in the playoffs in the NFL, but I think he's done a great job. It's a great story. It's stabilizing for the Texans. We hope he plays great this Sunday to go ahead and win and have the Texans upset the Titans, but he's just a good, solid quarterback.
All right, Sunday Night Football will feature two AFC West teams battling for a playoff spot. Chargers at the Raiders. Both are 9-7, but I think both teams being in the situation are very surprising for me for different reasons. I have not believed the last month or so that the Raiders would be able to make anything out of this season after everything that they've had to deal with on and off the field. And I've been surprised they put together a winning streak together. I've been surprised that they have got to 9-7, and I'm shocked that they have a play-in game. They have a chance to make it to the postseason, and I'm surprised on the other side of the coin with the Chargers, because I'm surprised they put themselves in the situation where they have to win to get in. I thought, okay, here's a playoff team. They got away from, you know, their former head coach Anthony Lynn, who they underachieved under. They have, you know, Justin Herbert now, one of the young stars of the league. This is a team that's going to compete for a division championship. And they did, but they lost to the Chiefs, and then they lost to the Texans. And now here they are at 9-7, even playing field with the Raiders in Las Vegas. You got to win and get in. And so, I most people are inclined to pick the Chargers. They're only a 3-point favorite. But I don't know now, because, I didn't think both these teams would be 9-7 at this point, so maybe the Raiders can win. What do you think?
Well, what you said is very accurate. The Raiders should have been dead multiple times with what's gone on, especially with losing the coach mid-year, who was the offensive designer and also the play caller, right? And in the ear of Derek Carr, just talking to him and talking to things, and that quarterback-coach combo was really trying to settle Derek Carr down and get the Raiders the football where it needed to be and all of that kind of stuff, and suddenly Gruden's gone, and you got to deal with all of that. So the Raiders have been through so much and still have popped out and stayed alive. It's pretty unbelievable, a great compliment to them, first of all. It's hard to believe in them because of all these things, but I think we do need to give some credit to Derek Carr. I think that he is probably more of an established leader and a quarterback than a lot of people want to give him credit for. Around here, you don't want to like the Raiders in any form. He's not dominated and won a lot of playoff games. He fumbles the ball too much in the pocket. You've seen him do those things, but and you've seen the Chiefs dominate the Raiders in division games, so you don't want to think of the Raiders being that legitimate. But I do believe in Derek Carr, and I think this is the example. In my mind, what pops into my mind when you bring that up is how good Derek Carr is at not just what you see on the field throwing the ball, but how good a leader he is, how he's grown up and said, I don't care who the coach is, I don't care how many injuries we have or what the issues are. Because remember, he's got Darren Waller, who's the guy they can throw to all the time, and then when he's not available, it's like, how can they possibly win? They lost a couple of their weapons because of legal issues, the speed on the outside. I mean, how do they keep it all together?
Hunter Renfro's a stud.
Well, I do agree with that. I've thought that at Clemson. I said, I love this guy. He's had a great year, hasn't he? But Derek Carr, I think, deserves a lot of credit. And on the other side, what is the hit on Justin Herbert? When he came out from Oregon, what was the thought process? I think, Nate, I heard you say it before. I think it, if I summarize what you'd said before, Nate, is that, it, you know, he is an athlete. He's a player. But is he really a leader? Is he just one of the guys in the huddle, or is he the quarterback? And I think this is the example where Derek Carr is a quarterback, taking the Raiders further than they should be, and Justin Herbert's just a good kid. I mean, I think he's probably just a really solid contributor on the team. He's not going to ruffle anybody's feathers. He's got the respect of the team. But I don't see any focus on him taking that team on the back and saying, I don't care what everyone else around me is going to do. We're going to win this game. You know, that quarterback mentality. I think Justin Herbert just plays. And what, I believe that's the difference here. Derek Carr's overachieving, and Justin Herbert's just playing, and it ends up meeting at the same spot. The Chargers are way more dangerous. When they play their best game, I believe the Chargers are a lot better than the Raiders. If you're looking at a playoff opponent, right, the Chiefs or anybody else who's made the playoffs, who do you think they'd rather see? The Raiders. Right? Like, I'll take the Raiders. I don't want to have to play the Chargers. The Chargers are dangerous. Their best game is really, really hard to beat. But Justin Herbert is kind of an unemotional, just play the game, and he does some good things, but he doesn't do a, you can't count on him. So I'm not done with Justin Herbert. I'm not saying he's not going to be an elite quarterback, but he's got a long ways to go. He's not wired that way, and that's what they said coming out of the draft, into the draft. That's one of the reasons why they weren't as high on Justin Herbert. Now, the coach, I said, I don't know who was with me because we haven't all been together, right, for these Fridays, but, you know, I couldn't have made more fun of the silliness with which Staley coached the Chiefs game. He lost all credibility in his locker room, in my opinion. I mean, it was a joke. It's so silly that he's, I don't believe in you. Here's my message. I don't believe in you guys. I know you're ahead of the Chiefs, but these are the mighty Chiefs. And you Chargers, if you don't take every risk in the world, and if you don't score a touchdown on every possession near the goal line, then you don't have a chance to compete with the mighty Chiefs. I mean, that's the message he sent his team, guys. Right before the half, up by four, ball close to the goal line, kick the field goal, walk in and tell your team, we're up by seven against the Chiefs. We're better than them. You just beat them up, and we're going to go out in the second half and do it again, and we're going to win the division. That's what he said, but that's not what he did. But that's what he should have said. Instead, he coached with silliness, and he also showed his team he has no trust in them. He cannot play regular football. He's got to play silly football to have a chance to win. That stuff gets back to you, and I don't think they've been the same since. I think that he lost a ton of credibility in his locker room after what he did. He gave the Chiefs the game. He won the game. He was the MVP that night on that Thursday night game with the Chiefs, and I thought it would hurt him inside of his locker room, and it's my opinion, it probably has, because the Chargers have not played great football since down the stretch, have they? I mean, they've just been an underachieving team. Like you said, Steven, I can't believe they're fighting for their lives on Sunday night. They should be one of the best teams in the AFC if you look at what they can do when they play their best football, but they're going to play their best football with the joke of his coach and a player who leads them who's kind of indifferent. It's like, did we win? Did we lose? Okay, I'll try hard next week. That's fine, but that ain't going to win you championships. Tom Brady doesn't work that way, man. You're not going to beat him. He'll be pissed off when he loses a game, and he'll be in everybody's face in the locker room, even the defensive players, even the defensive coaches. He'll tell them what they better do, or he's going to be coming around and causing some issues. That is the difference. That type A personality that a Tom Brady has, you know, Patrick Mahomes, who's going to refuse to lose. I don't see that in Justin Herbert. And right now, I think that's probably a difference of why the Chargers aren't achieving to the level they should be.
So you got Raiders or Chargers?
It's weird. For some reason, I'm wanting to say the Raiders just for these intangibles. But, gosh, how can I pick it? The Chargers are so much better than the Raiders at their best. I mean, come on. I guess I trust Derek Carr more than I do. He's not, you know, usually I say head coach and quarterback, but I'm going to say Derek Carr is head coach and quarterback. I trust him more than I do Staley and Herbert. Can you believe it? I'm still thinking, gosh, the Chargers got to win, right? But it's just blowing in my brain right now. I bet the Raiders win this game. So I've circled around and said nothing. I apologize for that, but.
Well, I'm.
It should be the Chargers, but are you saying Raiders?
I'm rooting for the Raiders.
Okay.
Because I'm with you.
I can't trust either one of these teams. I really can't.
My damaged heart does not need to see round three of the Chiefs and Chargers. I mean, I'll watch it, but I'd like to root for the Raiders. Okay, and give us a score. For Chiefs and Broncos, Jake is just wondering if the Chiefs might win by more than 10.5.
I'm going to say no, 27-17. Drew Lock is going to be playing with an energy level. I think quarterbacks, when it's the last game of the year, have less pressure on them and could play a little more loose. So I think Denver's going to give it a fight, and I think Drew Lock's going to play one of his best games. It's still going to be hard for them to score, and so I think they'll fight the Chiefs for longer. You know, I'll go 27-20 or 27-17. Either one of those don't do the 10.5, right?
Yeah. You know what? As long as the Chiefs win, I don't care, but Jake has other motives. Stan, thank you so much for the time, sir. We appreciate it.
Jake's back in the saddle, man. When we were at break, I was able to talk to him on the phone. Now you're talking about him looking at these long for real good monetary purposes. It seems like everything's back to normal. We're done with the holidays, and here we go.
Oh, we're back. I don't know if we're normal. Stan, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, see you guys.
That's Mr. Stan Weber. Coming up next, we'll see if Gary Lezak has lashed out at the listeners and viewers on social media in the last hour like he did yesterday. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.